Warning, this story contains descriptions of sexual assault and exploitation. Hi, everybody. Well, thank you for listening to Bloody Podcast. Are you laughing at my warning?
Yeah, because it was fucking awesome. I was like, oh, shit. Honestly, it kind of reminded me of the Jackass one. Warning, these are stunts performed by professionals. Do not blow, blow. Yes. You definitely shouldn't try any of the shit that you're going to hear ever.
Oh, no. These weren't professional anything. No.
No, there was no
take my warning seriously. As I was saying, yes. Thank you for listening to Bloody Podcast. I'm your host, Maria Felix, with our resident guest, Cash Abdumalik.
How's it going? See, this is the best podcast you ever had.
Oh, God.
See, it's the best podcast you ever had.
Oh, man. Oh, already going into it. Guys, we've got a doozy of a story today.
A dilly of a pickle.
We are talking about Lisa Connolly, also known more popularly as the murder of Bobby Kent. I guess we should just jump into it.
Yeah, we could also say that this is the true case of the story from the film by Larry Clark, Bully.
Yes.
Boom.
And the book by Jim Schutz, all by the same name, Bully.
Right.
The book is our main source for today.
Cool.
Just so that everyone is like not who isn't familiar with the 2001 film Bully, it is by the same dude who did Kids.
Yes.
If anybody watched that, because most people have the same reaction to Kids and Bully, where it's like it's too much.
Yeah.
It's too much.
I will say that we did go back and watch it, and we were both like, Bully's a really good movie.
Bully is really... It sticks to the facts of the case.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's really... Like, say the excessive nudity, what you will. But also, that's Larry Clark's style. He came up as a photographer first, and he was already well-known as a photographer before he directed those films.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not saying... I mean, whatever. All the people in his pictures are... Over 18.
They sign releases.
Yeah.
Like, here's my dick, Mr. Clark.
So, when the murder happened, the Miami Herald lamented that the crime was yet another deeply carved symbol of the death of suburbia. Specifically, the South Florida suburb.
Aw, shit.
Okay, so, as I said... Everyone's got to stick with us, because this story has a lot of names and a lot of towns. So get in the Camaro. We're going down to motherfucking Fort Lauderdale.
Woo!
And we're going to party. Hollywood, the city of Hollywood, Florida, style.
Hollywood, the city of Hollywood, Florida, style. That's what they say when they're partying down
they
there.
They have to clarify.
No, let's go to Hollywood, the city of Hollywood, Florida. Style.
So our story begins in the city of Davie with little Lisa Connolly and Alice, nicknamed Allie Willis. The girls were being raised in the standard nuclear style family that was requisite for the area when they were placed into St. Bernadette Catholic School. By the time the two girls were 12 years old, both sets of parents had gotten divorced. Their mothers retaining main custody of them. Allie's mom would eventually remarry. As the best friends grew into teenagers, Allie became wild and rebellious. Lisa tagged along with her friend as often as she could, but was less confident and more sullen.
The dopey of the two. If I may be so blunt.
While Allie was thin and blonde, Lisa was chubby. With ruddy cheeks and stringy red hair.
There's nothing wrong with that, but she's done some bad stuff, so I'm gonna call her some names. Not right now, but soon.
So let's talk about Allie. Allie started having sex at the age of 12.
Jesus.
Her mother tried to control her overactive child, but all Allie had to do was throw a tantrum, scream, and throw things at her mother and stepfather until they relented. To whatever she wanted.
Do you think they hit her?
No. Lisa would do the same thing to her mother. They were like tantrum queens. To their parents, those tantrums must have been bone-shattering because they did everything they could for their little girls to avoid being subjected to one.
Hollywood, Florida style.
That is bad behavior.
Yeah, that's bad parenting. You guys fucked up.
Yeah, that's the thing about this story. Like, I feel bad for the parents at certain points, but then at other points, I'm like, no, this could have been prevented.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the fucking problem with this story, is that I feel like none of the parents are like, I did something wrong.
Yeah, they're just like, I can't believe how this happened.
How could this happen? In Hollywood, Florida.
Yeah. Tell you what happened. You didn't shake your kid. I'm kidding.
You didn't shake the kid? God.
Fucking good.
And we're talking about the 80s and early 90s here.
Yeah.
The time on the main part of our story takes place, it's 1993. So anyway. This is a little bit before that. This is a few years before that. Allie tried to run away at the age of 14 with another friend, and they both called their boyfriends, who they had been forbidden to see, like their parents were like, you can't see them, to take them to Miami to party.
Mm.
The boyfriends were both men who were 18 years old and were both in local neighborhood gangs.
And they're 15 at the time.
She's 14. This is when she runs away. This is not even gay. We're still talking about Allie's backstory.
I know. It's gross.
So much backstory. So much backstory here.
Jesus.
Yes. So instead of taking the girls down to Miami, they drove them out under a freeway overpass and repeatedly assaulted them.
Ugh.
When they were en route to take the girls who knows where else, a concerned citizen saw the roughed up, terrified girls in the car while they were at a gas station and called the police.
One good man in Florida.
Yeah.
My God.
After that, Allie became paranoid that the men, who were sentenced to 12 and 18 years respectively, or like each of them, would escape, or that their gangs would come after her. She was afraid to go back to South Broward High School, so she transferred, but only managed a spotty month of school before dropping out of high school completely. Her parents put Allie in therapy, but avoided the fact that Allie had been sexually assaulted, and no one told the therapist about it. So Allie did not properly process it.
Hmm.
At a young age, she leaned into her pain by masking it with drugs, drinking, and a lot more sex. After a while, her mom and her stepfather sold their local business and current home and moved 150 miles north to Palm Bay, convinced the move would help Allie get better. All the while, her mom showered Allie with money and lavish gifts in the hopes that her little girl would be happy again. But Allie just took that money and ran back down to Broward County, spending it on her friends and driving them around in her new Corvette.
Ugh. God damn it, man. Alright.
We're not parents. So we don't know how hard it is to raise a kid. Okay, so anybody out there is like, you don't know what it's like. We don't know what it's like.
You don't know what it's like. We don't. We fucking don't. But still.
Some things are just like not about parenting. They're about like caring about another person in the proper way.
Yeah.
And I know this is the 80s and the 90s, and we don't talk about rape, and we don't talk about, you know, beating like, you know, like physical assault, mm-hmm. when between domestic partners and all that. But like, and especially when it comes to like children and their parents in the suburbs.
Yeah.
It just doesn't exist. But that's ultimately the fucking problem here.
Yeah. And somebody could be like, oh, you're not a parent. I'd be like, I'm not a fucking truck driver either, but I know I wouldn't do it drunk.
Yeah.
So I know I wouldn't do some shit like this. Fucking, come on.
Her mom just felt that the best way for Allie to move on from it was to not talk about it. So she didn't push it.
All right.
But yeah. But, you know, there was stuff besides that, too. Like, they put her in therapy, but, like, the girl is, like, freaking out, paranoid, and getting high all the time. And granted, I get high all the time. But I waited until my brain was, for the most part, fully developed.
That's true. That's true. And you also deal with your problems when you're high. I mean, you don't just, like, zone out, you know?
But you're, yeah, but if you see that your kid is getting high all the time, they're a kid, it stuns the growth in a much...
Yeah, like, yeah, absolutely. You know, absolutely.
Anyway, we could pontificate about the errors of parenting in the 80s all day.
Lest we not.
So anyway, so she hangs out in Broward County down where Lisa lives still all the time.
Right.
So once, when all of Allie's friends' parents didn't allow her to stay the night because they were like, this girl's always fucking down here and she doesn't have a job, she doesn't go to school, she's just down here fucking being a bad influence, causing trouble. You know, I'm sure, like, my mom... like, forbid certain people from spending the night at my place or me going to their place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I get it. Absolutely.
So, that happened. And then, so, anyway. So, this one night, that whole happened. Everybody's parents are like, she's not fucking staying here. Okay, get her out.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, one of her friends is like, okay, so you can't stay here, but I have a friend. Why don't you go stay with my friend Tom? He's older, but he's cool.
She's like, awesome.
Yep. So, Tom turned out to be a pimp who specialized in trafficking underage girls from good neighborhoods for $150 an hour.
Oh, God.
Like all his other girls, he took Polaroids of Allie performing sexual acts to show to his clients. In May of 1993... the cops held a routine sting operation to bust the underage ring. But this particular bust was botched. The three cops who took the whole thing too far. Detective Brian Rupp didn't stop at exchanging money. Instead, he was recorded receiving fellatio from an underage girl until he climaxed.
Oh my God! Fucking cop, man. Jesus Christ. I mean, what do I expect?
Yeah.
Nothing less.
The DA discovered it. Well, like, nobody watched the tape fully until, when assistant DA did. And it's really funny, because in the book, Shutt says that the assistant DA is like, he fucking came! Like, in the middle of the office.
That's fucking awesome! It's like, oh, yeah, he received it, but I'm not sure he climaxed or anything. He fucking came! Thank you very much. Okay, yeah, he came.
Him and his partner were fired for a year.
A year?
They were fired, okay? They were fired. They were officially fired. And then that really only lasted a year during their appeal. And then they were rehired as patrol cops.
What?
Another cop that was there, the one that was operating, like, in the room,
mm-hmm.
in the other room, was demoted. But he wasn't, that was it.
Wow.
According to the Broward Sheriff Department Facebook, Brian Rupp retired in 2014, from the force, once again as a detective. And a shining example of an exemplary career and cop family legacy.
See, now, I always feel bad about making fun of Florida sometimes. You know? Because I'm like, alright, you know, the jokes are easy. It's this and that. You know, let's not pigeonhole or make a blanket statement about Florida. But this makes it hard.
But this happens all over.
That's true. So I guess
the LAPD is.
Oh, they're fucking dog shit.
Yeah.
So, you know, I apologize, Florida. It's all of you.
It's just
America.
The cops.
And, you know, it's the world. I hate this place. I'm out of here. That's me leaving.
Yep. So moving past the cop stuff. While Allie was out as a working girl, her mom convinced her to enroll back in school. She ended up pregnant with another kid's child.
Hey.
Married him. Had the kid, and ended up divorcing a few months later. She gave the kid to her mom, and continued turning tricks and hanging out in Broward County. During Christmas break in 1982, Allie and Lisa were hanging out. The girls went shopping at a new strip mall on Sheridan Street. Afterwards, they went to the Publix deli counter for a sandwich. Those are some good sandwiches.
Publix?
Publix.
P-U-B-L-L-I-X?
Yes. P-U-B-L-B-L.
P-U-B-L-X?
Ah, yes. Publix?
Ah, yes. Delicious sandwiches.
Two young meatheads were working the counter. Allie began flirting. Thank you, because this is a deli.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
Bobby Kent, the more domineering of the two, told Marty Puccio to ask the girls if they wanted to go to a party later. Bobby commented that he would take Allie and that Marty would take Lisa because he preferred bigger girls.
I think his language was more cavalier.
He used big girls the first time.
Oh, he did?
But this is like upon encounter. Mm-hmm. So he was like, he likes big girls. That's what he said. He's like, I'll take you, you're cute. My friend likes big girls. Something like that. Something fucked up like that.
Sweet, great.
Yeah. Maybe, Allie replied, and they took off. The girls did meet them later on that day at the beach, and they watched the guys surf for a few minutes, and then the guys invited them to a party. But on the way, it said, quote-unquote, party, which didn't really exist, off the interstate highway. Everything happens on the interstate in Florida. The pair had sex in Bobby's Camaro with the custom speaker system. Bumpin'.
I mean, I would do a whole bitchin' Camaro intro right now from Dead Milkman, but we don't have time. Just know that I know the reference. I got a bitchin' Camaro.
He was real proud of his car. Yeah, he had a bitchin' Camaro.
There you go.
And he loved it as much as he loved steroids, lifting weights, and porn.
Talk.
We'll get to that. Let's talk about Lisa Connolly. More important than Bobby was the fact that now Lisa had sex.
Finally.
Not only did she have sex, she was certain she had a boyfriend now. Something she had pined for so long was finally here in the rippling package of surfer muscle.
Yeah.
That was Marty Puccio. And she was absolutely entranced.
God, he's so wonderful.
Lisa, loved, the idea of having a boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Her entire bedroom had, not her entire bedroom, but there's a huge, two-wall mural that consisted just pictures of, hot people.
A lot of Tiger Beat.
Less of the pop sensation and more of, models... And yeah, heartthrobs.
Cutouts of Dior ads.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Nice.
She loved, physique, but because she was dumpy.
Dumpy? Oh, she's dumpy now. Lisa was a pile of laundry.
Aw, dude. Her mom knew that Lisa had always wanted a boyfriend. But it just wasn't gelling for her. Allie was always going on and on about how all it took was confidence. That was easy for Allie to say. Once again, because she was dumpy.
All it takes is confidence, God. Pick your gut up off the floor.
Lisa skipped school as much as Allie and all the other bad kids. But she was not attractive enough to join the prostitution ring, for example. Besides that, Lisa's dad didn't talk to her. He talked to her once in a while. It wasn't a banishment thing, but he had already started his second family and just kind of forgot about Lisa.
He's like, you all right? All right.
Yeah. When she got to the 11th grade, he rewarded her by giving her enough money to buy a car. So she bought a 1986 Firebird.
All right. Yeah. Okay. 86 Firebird. Not bad.
After she was suspended for truancy, though, she ended up dropping out. She had a job at a dry cleaning place, and she had a car, so she was fine.
Yeah.
She didn't need school. But shortly thereafter, she ended up wrecking her Firebird.
Oh.
And neither her nor her mom had the money to repair it.
Now you got nothing but dumps.
Yep. Now she nothing but dumps. You dump school.
Yeah.
Dumpy butt. No. Dumpy butt.
We're mean.
They're mean. This group of kids is probably kind of mean.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I got this sounds really horrible. It's coming. Don't worry.
After the first encounter with Marty happened, Lisa told her mom, Maureen, about her boyfriend the next day. Maureen was happy for her daughter. She finally got a boyfriend.
Finally, girl.
And this is where, like, the author also really drills in the idea that Lisa is unattractive. He writes that Maureen, her own mom, would sometimes look at her daughter and see what the boys probably see. Quote, a fat girl, grown sullen in her shyness and disappointment.
Grown sullen in her sullen? Jesus.
Sloppily dressed, round-shouldered, testy. Later on, he calls her bovine.
Oh, man.
But he hates fat people because he also really hammers it in that Lisa's cousin, that Derek, is overweight, too.
See, here's the thing. Ain't nothing wrong with being fat.
It's okay, Jim Schutz, if you want to hate the fatties.
It's not okay to hate.
It's not okay.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. And calling somebody a bovine is a bit much.
But again,
she kind of deserves it. Please join us.
But it's also a vicious cycle, isn't it? Isn't it? Because, as we'll see, Bobby called her fat all the time. You know.
Holy cow.
Okay. Being a fat loser, dropout, with no money and no car, didn't matter now. Now there was a boy.
Mm-hmm.
Now there was only Marty.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about Marty.
All right, let's get into Marty.
And Bobby. We'll start with Barbie. Bobby.
Barbie?
Bobby came from a Persian-American family. His father, Fred Kent, worked in finance and provided his son, daughter, and wife with the American dream. He loved his son. He believed that he would be great. And pushed him to be the best.
You are number one. Be number one.
He had no accent.
Number one still.
He actually, him and his wife were those people that purposely get rid of their accent, like, altogether, to assimilate into American culture.
Dude, I'm back. Let's talk about the Florida Marlins. That is the team where we live in America.
Oh, my goodness.
It's fine, bro. Big ups to my boy.
Okay. In Fred's eyes, Bobby could do no wrong.
Mm.
Absolutely no wrong. It's his boy.
Bobby D.
It's his sweet baby boy.
Sweet, delicious Bobby. Plucked from the tree. A perfection.
Bobby had just graduated from high school and was on track to community college.
Beautiful.
It wasn't great, but, you know, it was something.
It's America great.
Yeah. Fred had leveled his expectations for his son. It really seemed like the only thing that Bobby cared about in the entire world was his car and the stereo. And if Bobby was being completely honest about that, which he wasn't with his dad, it was not Bobby who installed the custom parts of his car, it was Marty.
Nice.
Bobby was too impatient and clumsy for it. Fred hated Bobby's friend, Marty. Bobby had long learned to avoid saying Marty's name and always said, my friend, when he told his dad who he was hanging out with that night. Fred saw Marty as a bad influence. Although the boys grew up down the block from each other in Hollywood Hills, Florida, to Fred, they seemed worlds apart.
He's nothing like you, bro.
Exactly. After the boys met at 8 years old, they spent every waking moment together, though.
Oh, this kid.
When they were preteens, Marty got into skateboarding. He had a natural athletic talent that Bobby did not. Marty's skating led to surfing. And by seventh grade, he was recognized by the older surfer dudes as one of their own. But Bobby was never far behind. He was always there.
Mm.
The older surfer dudes in the area were, like, serious surfers who had, like, dropped out of school and had local sponsorships for surfing and stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sponsored by Pizza Hut.
Or Quicksilver.
Sick.
No, that's a big one.
Quicksilver's a big one. Maybe they were.
Never know. So on the beach, Marty was a rising star. But at home, he would complain about wanting to move, and he was always glum. Because Bobby would always tag along with Marty to the beach. They'd show up dressed exactly alike. And the other surfers just had to put up with Bobby because of Marty, despite how weird their friendship was.
And I'm sure they did not care for Bobby and his attitude.
They did not care for Bobby and his attitude. They really did not. One time at the beach, Bobby told Marty to go get him something to eat in front of the other dudes. And when Marty asked him for money, Bobby punched him in the fucking face. Marty, long ago conditioned to this behavior, walked off to buy Bobby's food.
Wow.
The surfers drove Bobby off the beach, but when they drove Marty home that night, there was Bobby, waiting for him outside his house. They watched as Bobby slipped an arm around Marty's neck and pulled his forehead towards his own. Like the forehead to forehead.
Like horse's brain.
Yes. Apologizing.
Did you ever have that in your youth? Did somebody ever, like, try to fucking domineer you and all that shit?
Yeah.
Yeah. How'd you handle it?
We moved. We happened to move. We happened to move back to California. Out of Florida.
Hey! Pretty sick. Pretty sick.
My abuse took place in Little Havana.
I'm sorry, baby.
It's all right. We happened to move.
Yeah, there you go. I had somebody try to do that to me, too, with a domineering attitude.
Yeah. What'd you do about it?
I got up and left their house, and then I never went back.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, I was just like... Pfft.
That's great.
Insulted me in front of a whole bunch of people, and I was like, fuck you, and like walked out. It's just like, no.
That's great.
Yeah.
No. You did the brave thing. I just got lucky.
You would have done the same thing too.
It was different because it was a man. It was not a man, it was a boy. So it was different. It could have been it could have been a bully situation.
I'm going to find him.
Okay. So Marty accepted the apology for what I'm sure was like the millionth time. The millionth time. Oh my God, it happened again. And he went to bed. Another surfer friend recalled hanging out with them and seeing, and this is like when they're a little older, but he remembers seeing Bobby force Marty to go in his backyard with his dog after telling like a vicious story about the dog who was a Rottweiler attacking somebody.
Jesus.
And he's like, go play with my dog. And Marty's like, come on, stop fucking around. And he just like beat him. And then Marty eventually went to the back and you could hear the dog growling and snarling. And it was one of many times that Marty ended up going home with bites all over his ankles and shit from the dog.
Jesus Christ, man.
Ugh. It gets a lot worse. But also, you know, I hate to put dirt on anybody's name. But there's like little things that will happen throughout the story that it's like, well, Bobby's abuse didn't come from anywhere else. Mm-hmm. Didn't just manifest itself.
Mm-hmm.
It came from somewhere else.
Yeah.
Okay. Like the dog. Like, why is it a trained dog that will attack Marty, who is over at the house all the time?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Got all serious. It's like, yeah.
Hey, Twisted Listeners, I'm Cindy.
And I'm Diva, and we are the Twisted Listeners, a weekly podcast about murder and lists.
Each week, we cover 10 cases that all fall under a specific topic, which we also choose weekly. Past topics have included family annihilators, murderous moms, mysterious and spooky deaths, online predators, and other truly twisted topics.
We cover many well-known cases, but we also love to sprinkle in some lesser-known murders, so there's always something new and surprising in every episode.
So, if you love lists and true crime as much as we do, then we're the podcast for you. Join us for some twisted tales and interesting topics every week. And remember,
stay
off our
lists.
When high school began, Bobby and Marty were temporarily forced to separate. They had to go to different schools. This could have been a turning point for both of their lives. Maybe Marty could have been a successful surfer. Bobby could have owned his own car stereo business with his dad.
Hey!
Either way, they would have carved their own paths, independent of each other. But that was not to be. Marty's school lit out too late in the day, and he missed the best waves. So he transferred to Broward High, where Bobby was. And even though the two had been apart for a few months, and now belonged to different crowds, their codependency continued.
Reunited, and it doesn't feel good.
No, not at all. At the peak of their friendship, they were spending over 12 hours a day together. And I have to bullet point their friendship because it's so long and complex.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here we go. So they went to the same school together,
mm-hmm.
albeit Marty ditched much more often than Bobby to go surfing. Bobby stayed in school and got decent grades. Bobby would eventually convince Marty to join the Y, the YMCA for those of you not in the know, to pump iron. When Marty hesitated because he wasn't sure if he could surf and keep up with a gym routine, Bobby said he just needs to do steroids, like he does.
Jesus.
So, then Bobby would pick up Marty from the beach after like hours of surfing, and they would go work out for 2 hours daily.
That's
and do steroids.
That's fucking crazy.
It's crazy. Marty obviously quickly bulked up and became clumsy on the board. It's not good. You gotta be lean.
Yeah, you gotta be lean, man. You gotta streamline,
mm-hmm.
dude. I mean, we all know that.
He slowly stopped surfing, became addicted to steroids, and spent even more time with Bobby.
Ugh.
Roid rage would start to kick in often for Bobby.
What?
And he'd take it out on Marty. There's countless examples of it. The main example that is used is that a one time Marty swerved in, had to swerve into another lane, and he mm-hmm. bumped the tire of the Camaro.
Right.
And fucking Bobby punched him in the face while he was driving repeatedly.
Fucking crazy.
So, there's so many examples
God
of
damn.
It.
Damn.
In that particular case, Marty punched back. So I think that was a little bit of exhibition of his, not just defending himself, but also his own roid rage coming forth.
Mm-hmm.
When this happened, Bobby realized, oh shit, well, he can fight back and he can actually hurt me.
Yeah, let me take it easy.
Yeah, Bobby decided to show Marty how they could take out their frustration and anger on other people. They picked on the mentally disabled kids.
Oh my god.
They'd follow them to the bus, so they'd follow them home and throw footballs at their heads as hard as they could. Then they graduated to assaulting the disabled elderly, too.
Oh my god.
Beating them for no reason other than they were vulnerable. They were caught once with a tire rod and a spark plug on a cord, prowling the streets looking for victims. But they were released without penalty.
Fucking hell, man. My God. I know it's gonna get worse.
Marty had to go to a tough love program after that one with his parents. And the program, the tough love program, deemed that he had to pay for his own groceries to learn responsibility.
Ah, man. Wow.
On top of that, Marty began smoking as much pot as he could, which was often since he got an allowance weekly. And I just want to point out that Jim Schutz, for all his great reporting, kept saying that these kids smoked the hardest of the dope. There is no hard dope in Florida. It's all swag. Always has been, always will be.
Oh, shit.
Bobby's dad, so now there's Bobby. Bobby's uh-huh. dad forced him to get a job to not waste so much time.
Right.
And Bobby got the job at the deli counter at Publix. Marty was quickly hired at the same deli counter.
Lovely. Now they work together.
Now they work together, too. Bobby had always had a little obsession with porn, and it was growing. His porn had always been sadistic, bordering on torture porn. Both hetero and homosexual depictions.
Okay.
He would make Marty look at the same stuff, and if Marty tried to resist, Marty says Bobby would pin him down and make him watch it. While still teenagers, while still in the 10th grade, they went to gay bars, where Bobby pushed Marty to begin dancing. Marty became a popular dancer for the amateur hour, and he developed a routine for the crowd, and he really liked it. Shortly after that, though, Marty was able to convince... So I feel like he's, you know, it's like a life of abuse, and he doesn't... He's super confused. He's
super confused. Yeah, his friends are just like, do this. Do it.
He's like, I don't want to. He's like, why do I like this? I'm not supposed to like it.
Why do I like this?
So there was like a brief stint where Marty left because of all the abuse. Like, his parents were finally like, okay, well, you know, we can't move just because our boy is having problems. But then, like, they figured out that he could go stay with his aunt in New York for 4 months. And he tried. He went and he stayed there. And he ended up staying there 4 months.
Okay.
But then he came back. He just didn't fit. He felt he didn't fit in. You know, he's so out of sorts. Especially being transferred in the middle of a school year.
Yeah. God, I wonder what school he went to.
Me too. But he ended up coming back. And things resumed as usual for the boys. But Marty didn't last much longer in school. He dropped out halfway through the 11th grade.
Aww.
He stayed at home, smoking pot, and waiting for Bobby to get off school so they could go to the Y. He didn't even surf that much anymore. Bobby had also changed. He would wash his hands up to 100 times a day, and his roid rage was more prominent than ever. He's developing some quirks.
I noticed Nick Stahl washed his hands a lot in the movie, too.
Yeah.
Often naked.
Yeah.
It's a Larry Clark choice.
Eventually, Bobby decided that it would be great for the boys to make their own tape. Now, he wasn't saying they should be in a tape. He was saying they should get somebody to be on tape. So they trolled around for men until they got one. 40-year-old Larry Schaefer.
Hello!
Recently elected president of the Kiwanis Club.
Hey!
And recently out man experimenting with sexuality.
Deal with it. It's all unnecessary what I'm saying. Everything is unnecessary.
Larry and Marty connected over the phone, and then he met them both at the Y. He didn't really like the look of Bobby. Marty, on the other hand, was irresistible to Larry.
Oh. He's like catnip.
Marty explained how he needed money for groceries because of the program that he was at, and the three agreed that for $25 a call, Marty would call Larry 3 times a week for phone sex. Every time they showed up at Larry's house to collect the money, though, they'd steal something. They stole speakers, a food blender, a tape rewinder, like a videotape rewinder.
Oh, yeah, I remember those things they used to, the car ones, yeah.
Yeah.
Those are great.
Oh, yeah, the car thing, yeah, I remember that. Larry would confront them, and Bobby would beat him.
Oh, man.
Sometimes Larry would call the police, but ashamed and afraid, he would decline to sign a statement.
Oof. Poor Larry.
Poor Larry. Also questionable because I'm not sure they were of age.
Yeah, high school, right? Yeah, they're not.
I think if they are, they just barely are. But I don't think that they are.
I don't think that they are. Larry, you're kind of a piece of shit too, buddy.
It's a little weird, Larry. We want to feel bad for you because it is abuse, you know. But
you know what?
Were they 18? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Every time I yell out Larry, I just keep on imagining Larry David. The fuck you, Larry?
Okay, well, I don't know if you want to keep your Larry David in your mind for the next bit. But
okay.
Eventually, Larry would agree to make their video. He allowed himself to be recorded with a dildo.
Jesus.
Sodomizing himself and humiliating himself while Marty gave direction in the background. They called the video Rough Boys.
Rough Boys.
No porn store wanted the amateur, badly shot, shitty quality video. So, that...
Was that all on the spine of the tape?
Oh, that'd be so great. No porn store wanted this badly shot amateur shit. It was after one particular beating that happened after the two had... Okay, so this is the beating that finally made Larry stop taking Marty's call. Was... It had been like weeks of Larry giving them money all the time, you know? And this time he was like, okay, well, I'm going to ask for a favor in exchange for the money so I don't feel like such a sucker. So he asked the guys to put up a fence for him because he bought the prefabricated fences.
Mm-hmm.
And they just needed to put them up in panels.
Mm-hmm.
But the boys put it up in the middle of the property line. Instead of at the property line.
Oh, what a bunch of dicks. They probably did that on purpose.
They did do it on purpose because it would have been more work to put it on the property line.
Not bad.
So when Larry got annoyed about it, they beat the shit out of him. Again. But I think this time it was pretty bad. I think they cracked his ribs and stuff.
Oof.
And that was it. Larry never took a call from Marty again as much as he wanted to.
He's like, should I call him?
I mean, I'm sure there was some of that.
What's he doing? Is he thinking of me? I bet he called him Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn when they were putting up the fence.
Oh, God. So they did all this, like, all this stuff, right? And whenever Bobby decided that it was getting too gay or that Marty was enjoying it too much, he would just beat Marty up again all the time. Because it was all supposed to be a scam. It was supposed to be like a joke, like, you know, like the hitting the mentally disabled children in the head.
Jesus.
It was just supposed to be to scam gay men out of their money because they deserved it. Supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Bobby said.
This is horrible.
Yeah. So now that Marty was a dropout, Fred Kent disliked Marty all the more. He couldn't understand why his champion of a son spent all of his time with an aimless burnout.
My sweet boy.
My sweet baby boy. Fred had tried everything. He even had put the house on the market once to show that he was willing to move them away so that they wouldn't hang out together. But Bobby would promise to never hang out with Marty again, but to just please don't make them move. Fred would believe him, but... The boys never stayed apart for long.
I trust you, bro. I don't know why, but I do.
And now, there was also Lisa, who spent every waking moment gazing at Marty's perfect physique. So a month into Lisa and Marty's first meetup.
Meet cute.
Yeah. Florida meet cute.
Florida meet cute. That's horrible.
Maureen, her mom, heard Lisa on the phone telling Marty to never hit her again. So she walked in and found Lisa's face swollen and bruised. She took the phone and confronted him, and he responded, quote, "The only thing I can say to you, lady, is you're a pig and so is your daughter."
Nice.
Yeah, real nice. Real nice. So Maureen was saying that she was going to send her, I think it's her brother over there, you know, who's a tough guy, mm-hmm. tough Italian guy. But Lisa was like, no, I love him. And so, you know, nothing happened. And on top of that, Lisa ran away that same night to stay at Marty's for a week while his parents were away.
Man, I would have pulled a fucking, not that I'm in this situation or ever would be, I would have pulled a fucking Jimmy Conn on that fucker.
Yeah, right.
Fucking bit my knuckle. Gone over and beat his ass with a fucking trash can.
Yeah.
That's how you do it. I'm Florida.
And I'm sure the uncle might have too, but you know, nobody said anything. So Lisa arrived at Marty's house with her friend Sharon. And this is the only time we hear about Sharon, because Sharon had a bad time.
Mm.
Thankfully, Sharon was like, I'm out of here. Before she got held up into this fucking warped vortex of friendships. Anyway,
in the film, was Sharon the one who worked at the Pizza Hut?
No, that's Claudia. She'll come up later.
Okay, cool.
So, they show up to Marty's house and Bobby is there. The boys showed the girls their Rough Boys video.
Rough Boys.
And when the girls weren't into it, they were like, fine, and then they pumped them full of pot and alcohol. Like, they were all, I'm sure all four of them were getting high and drunk. And they pretty much refused to let the girls leave. And they had sex with both of them repeatedly.
Nice.
Sharon would later say that the guys even simulated sex on each other. But when she was like, are you guys gay? They just laughed really hard.
No, gay. Yeah, they didn't say no. They were just like, no, gay.
This went on for 2 days.
Until 2 days?
2 days.
They left them. They kept them in the house for 2 days.
They kept them in the house for 2 days. Oof. For the until Bobby tried to make a sandwich. He went out to the kitchen and tried to make a sandwich and found that the bread had been left out and was stale. He blamed Marty, pulled Marty into his room, and beat him for several minutes.
Jesus.
When they emerged, Bobby sent the girls home. Lisa's happiness with having a boyfriend, despite all his fucking issues, outweighed anything else. They remained together for 5 months before Lisa started bringing Bobby up to Allie again.
Mmm.
Allie hadn't gone back down to Fort Lauderdale since the night they first hung out with Bobby and Marty. She had pretty much forgotten all about it. And I'm probably going to guess that's because Bobby's not too impressive since he started steroids at like fucking 12.
Right, there you go. Tiny penis man.
Yeah. Besides, Allie had made friends at home now. So Allie had managed to reduce her parents to little more than ATM machines. She had found two friends to reap the benefits with her. Heather Swallers and Donnie Semenik. These were the latest in the kids that Allie would bring home and keep in her room like stray kittens.
Jeez.
It started when the father of her baby lived in her room for those few months before mm-hmm. they divorced.
Right.
And since then, Allie and her friends walked right by the adults without a word, did whatever they wanted behind that closed door, and Allie did not expect to have to say a word about it. I just can't fathom that. Like, bringing any kid home and my mom never, like, being like, just being unfazed, unconcerned.
Yeah, like, I don't walk by anybody's parent without saying hello, or like, hello, mister, blah, blah, blah. Like, I still don't do that shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but it's like, even the parents, in this case, she's just like watching like these strange kids come to her house, and she's like, they're not leaving.
They're not leaving.
They've been in there for days.
Yeah. I mean, that's this whole situation, I mean, it's built in and of itself, because I mean, they're adult. It's all insane.
Yeah.
It's insane. Wow.
So, because her parents were so... Oh, if her mom did try to confront her, Allie would throw a fit.
Hey, me!
Her parents were so tired of the tantrums, the drug mania, and the paranoia that they let Allie do whatever she wanted.
It's like Cartman.
Yeah. Hmm. The way her mom saw it is that at least she was home. Allie met Heather at the mall, decided that she was cool, and bought her a bunch of clothes on her mom's credit card. So Heather was immediately devoted to Allie.
Hmm.
Her young mind had long ago been warped. Her mother had traumatized her from when she was a baby. Because her mother, too, was traumatized. Her mother had a father that was a rapist and a murderer. and she saw him kill her, I'm sorry, grandfather. That was a rapist and a murderer. So she saw him kill her grandfather in front of her. Sorry.
Her grandmother.
Grandmother.
Right, okay.
The grandfather killed the grandmother in front of Heather's mom. So right. She saw that. So when Heather's mom had her kids, had Heather and her baby brother, she was already so broken that she would wake the children up and read the most brutal parts of the court transcripts to her kids.
Jesus.
Over and over. On top of that, Heather's mom only dated women, men who abused her. So Heather was witness to that her whole life. Oof. So Heather had a tough upbringing.
Heather's mom does not have it going on.
No. She coped with alcohol. This is Heather. Coped with alcohol, crack, sex, and any other drug that she could get her hands on. Donnie Semenik was a stoner dropout who had a loving family but found himself without direction. There's nothing really wrong. He just... whatever.
Just an idiot.
He hung out with a group of other burnouts who drove around Broward, smoked weed, and did little else.
There you go.
But because he was cute, he caught Allie's eye. And she bought him a bunch of clothes and treated him to other little things. And Donnie, who saw Allie as a smoke show, did anything she asked.
Smoke show? That's great.
The three of them spent most of their days in Allie's room and in her car. But now Lisa came calling. She suggested to Allie that she should see Bobby again. Bobby was into some weird shit, Lisa said. And Allie loved getting kinky. She didn't think much of him the first time. But this piqued Allie's interest. Lisa left out the fact that the relationship between what I would say is the three of them now had become even more abusive. Surprise, surprise.
Yikes.
Bobby had taken to calling her Shamu and Fat Girl in front of others.
Don't be putting down the killer whales, man.
And recently, both men had beaten her with a weighted belt while having sex with her.
Jesus Christ.
Lisa decided that the problem was Bobby. And getting Bobby to spend less time with Marty would allow Marty to be his sweet self. And that's where Allie came in. She wanted Allie to be with Bobby so she could have Marty all to herself. But the plan backfires.
Mm-hmm.
Allie does come down to Broward and hangs out with them, but Bobby sexually assaults Allie during the second meeting.
Oh my God.
Forcing her to watch the Rough Boys video as he's assaulting her.
That Rough Boys video is quite the aphrodisiac for him.
It seems to be the only one at this point.
Yeah.
After Allie tries to tell Lisa what happened, Lisa blames Allie and tells her to make up her mind. She had told her Bobby was kinky. Allie hightailed it back to Heather and Donnie in Palm Bay. Lisa now had to think of a new plan. But she had a new problem. At the Embassy Lake Shopping Center, Lisa bought a pregnancy test from the Winn-Dixie and tested herself in the bathroom. She was pregnant.
Oh, no.
Outside, she shared the news with a girl she knew, Claudia.
Claudia!
So Claudia, they don't show this in the movie, and I'll try to sum it up real quick, but Claudia and another girl had their own encounter with Bobby.
Oh, no.
Involving Lisa and Marty, too. One time when they were walking home, they got Claudia and her friend were a little too drunk. And Lisa and Bobby and Marty were driving around in the Camaro, and they spotted them, so Lisa suggested that they pull over and, you know, get them to hang out with them. While they were driving around, the other girl felt sick because they kept getting more drunk and smoking weed in the car, and she threw up in the Camaro. Which was huge bad news.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He loves that Camaro.
He loves the Camaro. Huge bad news. And he, like, kicked them out of the car and, you know, was telling them that they had to clean the shit up So Claudia got a hose, and she found that they were in the neighborhood, so she got a hose, and she was able to, like, clean her friend up a little bit and clean up a little bit of the car. But Bobby was just fucking losing it, and he was whispering to Marty, and they were whispering together, and then Lisa comes over, and she's like, "You guys should run, because they want to hurt you. They want to get you back in the car, and they're going to punish you for up in the car."
Punish you? Yeah. Jesus Christ.
So the girls are panicked, and they're high. They're cross-faded. They don't know what to do. But Claudia has the wherewithal to knock on somebody's door. And a man comes out, and she explains to them the situation, because Bobby's over there, like, telling them to get in the fucking car. And Claudia explains the situation. The guy takes one look at, like, fucking Bobby and fucking Marty and sees what fucking assholes they are right away. And he's just like, "Get the fuck out of here." And so then they run. And I tell you that. So the girls were saved.
Oof.
But it could have been a lot worse. A lot worse. So Claudia knows what the fuck Bobby is about.
Wow.
And besides that, that's all that fucking Lisa talks about. So by now, Claudia knows that she has had sex with both of them multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
So when she tells her she's pregnant, Claudia's like, "Whose is it?" And Lisa says, "It's Marty's." And Claudia says, "Well, by the sounds of it, it could be either of theirs."
God, this is horrifying. Horrifying.
Is the worst, one of the worst depictions of adolescence.
God.
Lisa dismissed Claudia and headed off to DNA Comics to find Derek Cervico, her cousin, to give her a ride to Marty's. Derek loved video games, Dungeons and Dragons, and the occasional psychedelic. He had graduated a year earlier from high school and currently had a part-time at a pizza shop. He was known to the preteens that frequented the comic store for being able to play hours of Mortal Kombat off a single quarter.
Kano. Raiden. Johnny Cage. Sub-Zero. Scorpion. Sonya.
Mortal!
I was waiting for you to do the rest, see how many you knew.
I know them all.
What about when it goes back and forth, so it just keeps saying it again? Sonya.
Sonya.
Kato. Sonya.
It just stuck.
Yeah.
Just stuck.
Raiden. Raiden. Raiden.
Raiden. He's like, "Pick me already." Yeah. Oh, jeez.
He also hosted Dungeons and Dragons tournaments at his house and brought in a lot of business for the shop because the kids loved to go watch him play. Adults also liked Derek. He was polite, fairly responsible, and knew how to talk to adults and was normally even tempered.
What a nice young man.
Yes.
That's rare around these parts.
It is. It truly is.
Mm-hmm.
Even though his mom told him Lisa was a bad influence, he liked hanging out with his cousin. And here she was, asking for a favor. And that is where we're going to stop for part one of the Lisa Connelly story.
Guys, it's going to get real bad.
Yeah.
Way worse.
Way worse. Ugh. We're excited to share it with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Good God. Jesus.
This is nice because it's like the end of the summer, and this is kind of like the end of their summer.
Yeah, the end of innocence.
Yeah, the end of the suburb.
Apparently. No more I love yous.
No. So next time we'll pick back up with Lisa, Allie, Heather, Donnie, Marty, Bobby, and Derek.
Not to mention
Mortal Kombat!
Have a good night, everybody.
Bye.